are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. It is Tuesday, which means Nick Winkler will be my guest today, a weekly wink episode on this Tuesday, and I think he's probably got some important things to say about what went down on Thursday night, so excited to talk to Nick, as I usually am, but it's always more fun after a win, which we haven't had a lot of this year. I do want to remind everybody to subscribe, rate, review the podcast. We're on iTunes, we're on Spotify, we're on Google Podcasts. We are everywhere that you can find podcasts, as is every podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Coming up tomorrow, I'll be talking with Patricia Traina, who is the host of Locked On Giants, so the Wednesday crossover episode, and then a little special guest on Thursday, not sure who, and then we'll probably continue to preview and have some idea of who's starting Monday Night Football as the week goes on this week. So exciting times for the 49ers because they won. And so we're going to have 10 days here to revel in this victory. If the 49ers win again on Monday, that's like practically a month of just 49ers fans strutting around in their gear. And who knows what happens after that. But a very winnable week coming up again in week number 10. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's look back at that Thursday night football game and have some fun doing that and dip into the mailbag with today's guest.
Nicholas Winkler, come on down.
Nicholas, how are you, sir?
Oh, buddy, come on. Coming off a win, just the second of the year after what we've been going through the last 5 or 6 weeks. Man, I'm feeling good. Yeah, Nick, my Takayo, he's the man. He's out there looking like the future of the franchise. Are you ready to start taking trade calls about Jimmy Garoppolo or what?
I think so. And so the game was on Thursday. If you got the order in before stores closed, I imagine that Mullins number 4 jersey should be showing up right about now.
Yeah. Well, no, it took about 4 weeks for my Goodwin one to come. So, you know, it might be a little bit, but it's actually funny. I saw a lot of people over the weekend at my restaurant just wearing Niner jerseys and stuff like that. And I was like, okay, they're proud again.
Yeah.
So they're coming out. And a lot of them had the 10 on too. And I'm like, so are you going to trade that in for a number 4? And you could tell the real fans, because, you know, they get into it. And there was one guy that was like, what? I was like, oh, that's sad. You should not be wearing that.
Oh, yeah. That is the worst. That happens all the time. When I was bartending, that would happen a lot. People would come in from out of town. And, you know, there's one, because I worked with a guy, he's from DC, and he was a big Washington Redskins fan. And it would piss him off so much because people would come in, like some dude would come in, some douchebag looking guy from Philadelphia, and you know, we'd be talking at the bar and be like, oh, I'm from Philly. He's like, oh, cool, yeah, Eagles fan, huh? And he's like, oh, dude, I'm a huge Eagles fan, big game coming up this weekend because the Redskins and the Eagles are playing. And he'd be like, huh, what do you mean? Like, looking at, like,
they are, there is,
yeah, you're a massive fan, I can tell. It's like that happens a lot where it's like, dude, like, how could you be so excited to rep your team so hard and really just have no clue about what's going on? That happens a lot, and it surprises the hell out of me.
Well, this dude had on, like, the legit jersey, too. I mean, those are not cheap. So, he definitely is a fashion statement for him. But, you know, we love Nick Mullins. It looked great. It was the storybook, you know, kid who is finally getting his chance undrafted. You know, the stories about him going out and, you know, going over the entire play sheet, you know, in his head after a game on the field and, you know, getting certified during the game on Twitter and this and that. But let's be honest, the Raiders make everybody look good, right?
Oh, yeah, that's a huge part of it, which is why it's going to be interesting to see how it goes going forward. And, well, luckily for Nick Mullins, the New York Giants are coming up next, who aren't a great football team either. So I think that's a bonus. And then after that, it gets maybe a little bit more difficult. But at this point,
it's Tampa Bay. Well, I mean, come on.
Defensively, they're not really great, but, you know, they've been able to put some points up. They have some weapons on the offensive side of the ball. Fitzmagic sort of fizzled out last week, so they've got a rough situation happening there. They can't figure out where they want to go with quarterback, but I think they have a much better chance of beating the 49ers, you know, for the 49ers to be on the road than to be at home against these two bad teams in a row. And they've got a little extra a pep in their step, too, I think the 49ers do, which is key here. And the latest from Ian Rappaport saying that the 49ers are leaning toward going with Nick Mullins again as starting quarterback And obviously Kyle Shanahan hasn't made that decision, and he's said that. So I don't know where Ian Rappaport's getting that information. Maybe somebody else in the building. But I think that's the least surprising story of the week, that Nick Mullins is going to start next week.
I mean, I think he got it from his brain, because he or his eyeballs, because he actually watched the two of them both play quarterback, and one of them looks quick. He looks decisive. He looks like he fully understands where everybody's going to be each and every play. They kept talking about it too. Like, he knows the playbook the second best, you know, right behind Kyle Shanahan. So of course you want this guy as your quarterback. He looks like he's got a pretty solid arm, man. He was super accurate. It looked good. There's zero reason to go back to CJ Beathard right now. Zero.
I agree 100%, especially if he's dinged up at all, but even 100% healthy. Even if he would have never got hurt in the first place, which is what opened the door, I think draft status had a lot to do with why Beathard was still playing and they didn't give Mullins a little bit more of a look, because Mullins has obviously been doing his homework behind the scenes. Like, he showed up, he was ready to play. He knew that offense. He knew where his hot reads were. The ball was coming out instantly. He had full control. That was awesome to see. And that had nothing to do with what the opponent was. Like, there was, obviously.
It was fun to watch.
Right. It was an orchestra. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
Rather than the madness that had been under CJ Beathard, the offense just looked like, and not to crush CJ Beathard, but man, the offense just wasn't. It looked like 11 dudes running around the field rather than one unit playing the same brand of football, right? It was beautifully orchestrated. And you know that's how Kyle Shanahan wanted it to look, and that's how it looked. So that was eye-opening, I think, for a lot of fans, and probably for Kyle Shanahan and the coaching staff and some people that maybe knew what he looked like behind the scenes but weren't sure about game day, and to see him just fully control everything and to hear how all the players talked about Mullins after the game and the ultimate confidence they had in him running the offense. I think there's no way you could go back. It's Mullins right now. And the clock could strike midnight, and I will say about Nick Mullins, he doesn't have, a ton of arm strength. He's not the biggest guy. Obviously, that's why he went undrafted, why he never got taken seriously, even when he torched his high school records and in the state of Alabama, the Crimson Tide didn't give him.
He beat all of Brett Favre's records,
right?
Too,
yeah. So
in college,
he was Gatorade Player of the Year in high school in Alabama, Alabama was like, who?
That's
who
a football place.
Yeah. You look like a kicker. You can't play football at Alabama. So he ends up at Southern Miss and then breaks Brett Favre's records. And so
it's a great story.
Alabama had A.J. McCarron. We saw A.J. McCarron on the field. I'll take Nick Mullins all day over A.J. McCarron.
Right.
And I bet he was probably better in college too, but he just never got that shot. So it's awesome to see him finally earn his shot. And just in was great. And here, so back to my original point, I kind of got off on a tangent there. Nick Mullins doesn't have the greatest arm, so it's a little bit when he throws deep to the sideline, that's usually the big throw that big arm quarterbacks is like, oh, he's that deep out. He can really rip that ball. And he doesn't necessarily do that. So there's some opportunity for him to get, and he just has so much guts, much like Brett Favre, who had games where he threw a bunch of picks. He's got guts and he'll try to fit it into tight windows and he'll make throws and he'll see it and just let it rip. And so that there's going to be a game this year. Like, let's say he starts all the way down the stretch and all the rest of the last eight games, Nick Mullins starts. There's going to be a game where he throws three or four picks. It's just, it's going to happen, but hopefully it doesn't happen next week, because then that might be the end of his run. And I just want to see it go for a while.
Yeah, especially with the bye week after that, you can really get him prepped for that Tampa Bay game, and it'd be nice. It'd be nice to see him get out there and look good again at home against a pretty bad Giants team. And then you go into the bye feeling good, sitting at 3-7, which, isn't ideal, obviously. But hey, let's be super optimistic real quick. This team's only 3.5 games out of a playoff spot. That's legit. 3.5 games.
I haven't even looked at playoff stuff for the 49ers, because it's like,
5-3 right now is that last wild card spot.
You know what's funny, not to cut you off with that, but someone on my Twitter timeline was talking about, okay, Niners win out, you go 9-7, the Rams just lost their first game, they lose out, go 8-8, you got the division right there.
You're sitting week 17, both sitting there at 8-7.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be awesome.
That'd be amazing.
Man.
So 5-3 is in the playoffs right now.
Yeah, 5-3 is in the playoffs. I think it's the Falcons or something there sitting, or Washington, someone like that sitting in the wild card spot at 5-3. It's Minnesota actually sitting there. Then you got a bunch of teams at 4-4, a couple at 3-4, a couple at 3-5, 2-6. I mean, there's a lot of teams in between the 49ers and that number six spot, but just go out and win football games. You know, this season's not over. Let's not write it off. And if Nick Mullins could be the next big thing, I joked about it in our fantasy football league, but at the same time, like, it really could be a thing.
It could be a thing. I think we'll have more questions about Nick Mullins. Let's move on to the mailbag.
Sounds good.
And if you would like to get to the game this week, I've got a place to go for all of your ticket needs. That is Vivid Seats. Vivid Seats is an online event ticket marketplace dedicated to providing fans experience that will last a lifetime with Vivid Seats. And of course, a special offer for Locked On Podcast Network listeners. Vivid Seats is giving listeners an exclusive promo code for new customers to receive $20 off orders of $200 or more to save even more money. Go to the App Store or Google Play to download the Vivid Seats app. Use promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off orders of $200 or more for new customers of Vivid Seats. Every purchase is backed by 100% buyer guarantee, from the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater tickets and more. Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app, enter promo code LOCKEDON for that special offer for new customers. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event. All right, Mullins Mania here. Let's start with...
I mean, it's much more fun having Mullins Mania than it is like talking people off the ledge.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. For sure. I want to go to... Well, first of all, this is something we didn't cover yet, and the Raiders, right after the game, decided they were going to waive Bruce Irvin. And so this question from Shano, and he said, will we go after Irvin? Does he cost too much for his age, and is he worthwhile this late in a lost season?
And what's he, like 31?
I think he's around 31, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's an obvious scheme fit, you know, because he was drafted and played under Robert Saleh in Seattle. And so I think he could play, you know, some strong side linebacker. He could play some, obviously, defensive end and rush the quarterback on passing downs. And I think he's probably a mild upgrade over some of the players that are currently on the roster that are doing those things. The question is he, well, you definitely wouldn't claim him off of waivers because you don't want to pick up his current salary. So
right.
The question is then, okay, is he an upgrade? Do you want to cut whoever would get cut? So you'd be replacing either Dakota Watson or Cassius Marsh, or definitely not Ronald Blair. Mark Zacha maybe would be the guy who would get
there
the
axe. There you go. Because, yeah, the first two guys you said are coming off pretty awesome games.
Right.
Again, against the Raiders, but... You know, when your defense gets eight sacks, you know, maybe you're just like, okay, let's just ride it for a little bit.
So you make that decision. You say, okay, well, let's cut Mark Nzacha and bring in Bruce Irvin, you know, and he'd be mm-hmm. one of the better pass rushers probably on the team, although I don't think he's ever gotten 10 sacks in a season. But, you know, he can get after the quarterback a little bit. He's an athletic guy, and he's still, I think, productive enough this late in his career. And then if you're Bruce Irvin, you're thinking, okay, do I want to go to a bad 49ers team that's going nowhere? Or is there a team right. that's a playoff team that's, you know, a contender that's going to offer me a deal that's because he's not going to get much money midseason to join a team? So that's the other part of it is would he even want to go to the 49ers after he clears waivers? But, you know, it's not something where it's like, oh, you got to go get this guy because you know,
right.
it's like, it's whatever. To me, it's just whatever. He's not going to be a part of the long-term future for the 49ers, so I'm not too worried about it.
Yeah, I wouldn't be upset if they didn't get him, like if he signed somewhere else. But at the same time, if he came on board, I'd be like, okay, cool. Yeah, go get that quarterback.
I agree. Let's go to Kevin. He said, since we're out of the Bosa sweepstakes, yeah, that's, by the way, that's the other thing we learned is that the Raiders are definitely the worst team in the NFL. So the 49ers probably are not going to be picking first. And if they beat the New York Giants, they definitely aren't going to be picking first. He says, right. since we're out of the Bosa sweepstakes, do you see us staying put and drafting Greedy Williams, who's a cornerback from LSU, or trading down to acquire more picks and draft Brian Burns and or a corner wide receiver in the second round? Side note, what in the hell happened to Julian Taylor at big end? Isn't development important? Thank you for the email, Kevin. Number one, it's way too early to like know exactly who's going to be drafted where and who should be taken where, and we don't even know where the 49ers are. I like a lot of the names that you mentioned there. I think you try to make need meet value with the best edge rusher in the draft in round one. That's the way I would look at it. But if that player's not there, then you move on to another position. Maybe it is cornerback, maybe Greedy Williams, maybe one of the wide receivers. But ideally, you're drafting an edge high, and it may not be Nick Bosa at this point. But It's kind of too early. So that's my answer there with that question. Is like, I don't even know who would be available and how these guys are actually going to slot. There's so much to go. People have to declare still for the draft. They got to go through workouts and combines. And I haven't watched all these guys to give the best opinion on everybody yet. So,
yeah, I mean, once the Niners run the table too, and they finish 9-7, they're going to be picking in like the late teens, early 20s.
Yeah, exactly. They're obviously not picking at 1, but are they going to be picking at 21 is the question.
Right. Exactly.
And Julian Taylor, I don't know, man. Julian Taylor should. Well, this is the problem, is they have a million big ends. So yeah, he's the last in the pecking order. And I think it's easy for fans to be like, put the rookie in. But you're in the locker room with a bunch of veteran dudes. I mean, good luck. How about that? That'd be awesome. Let's have fans go into the locker room and look Pierre Garçon in the eye and say, hey, you're benched this week.
Yeah, we want to see more Dante Pettis. You should sit.
Yeah, you're going to sit this week. That would be actually an awesome. That would be amazing to watch that. Your average fan. Find someone. It's sort of like, you know, when they read mean tweets on some late night shows. They do that. Find somebody who talks smack online on Twitter. Invite them in and be like, okay, here's the guy. Let him know.
Say it to his face.
Yeah. Here's 6'8 Eric Armstead. Tell him he's benched for Julian Taylor this week.
Right. Tell him he's a bum. Go tell him.
Tell him he was a waste of a first round draft pick. So, yeah, I mean, there's veterans that know the system. And I think especially on offense, that's part of it, too. It's like guys.
And just, if he was looking good in practice and he was actually, you know, looked game ready, you know, they would have him out there.
And there's plenty of time in his career. I think there's some other players and other positions and guys like Pettis and Richie James, obviously. I mean, it seems pretty obvious to me he's jumped Trent Taylor on the depth chart. I mean, Kyle Shanahan can sort of hedge and tell it how he wants. And there is a back injury from the offseason for Trent Taylor, but he was healthy enough to go early in the season, and he's not in there right now. And it looks like to me he got passed up on the depth chart. And I think that's warranted because I think Richie James is maybe, if not now, and probably now, but will be a better player and an ultimate slot weapon for the 49ers. So I got no problem with that. And so Julian Taylor is just, he's got more guys to pass, and there's not a lot of spot for him. And just getting active is a huge hurdle, let alone getting on the field once you're active when there's so many guys playing in front of you.
So have the 49ers brought any new running backs in? I mean, with Mostert going out, like what's the plan there? Do you know?
No, I haven't heard anything. Jeffrey Williams on the
practice. Where's Joe Williams at?
Joe Williams, I think, is gone forever.
That's crazy to me. Like, he knows the system, right?
Yeah.
They drafted him high. He must have been so horrible in practice. Why is this guy not anywhere near the franchise right now?
I think the big thing with him is just he didn't care. Like, he
didn't. Yeah, you're probably right.
He was kicked off or left two separate colleges for that reason. I mean, the 49ers scouting department did not have Joe Williams on the draft board at all.
Right. That's crazy.
And Kyle Shanahan loved the tape so much. He talked to John Lynch, and I love that about their relationship, Lynch and Shanahan. You know, Kyle Shanahan wanted a player. John Lynch went and got him. He took a guy that wasn't on the draft board at all. Like, this is a post seventh round grade they had on him because of off field stuff, mostly, not because he wasn't a talented human.
Right.
But Kyle Shanahan got that move from beyond seventh round to fourth round.
That's crazy.
Overnight. Like, this all happened before day three of the draft, between day two and day three, right? So
it's funny when you talk about the draft, too. I saw your quote about the 49ers had, or your tweet about the 49ers had a first-round grade on George Kittle.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like, where'd they have guys like Beathard?
Yeah, Beathard and Joe Williams. What kind of grades you have there on those guys that you took in front of Kittle? By the way, Kittle, I had Kittle on the shadow 49ers. I took him a round earlier in the fourth round, and I thought that was a steal. Like, George Kittle, it wasn't like he was some unknown guy. There was a few factors, I think, for him falling to the fifth round. They didn't throw the ball a lot at Iowa, which is interesting that they took the quarterback from Iowa before George Kittle because they threw it so little. And so I don't think his talents were showcased quite as well, maybe, as some other tight ends. And it was just a really good tight end class. Some freaky dudes, O.J. Howard and Evan Engram a bunch of really good tight ends. So I think that's part of it.
How good is George Kittle?
He's a monster. He's top five tight end in the league. With the way Gronk is been hurt and not doing much right now, there's a chance in the next couple of years you're talking about him with like Ertz and Kelsey is the best tight end in football.
Yeah, I mean, who else were you taking ahead of him? You know, besides those two guys, and you know, Gronk sat out again. He's been in the end zone what, one time this season.
Yeah, he's just so banged up. He's already wearing body armor, and you can tell when he runs. He actually
every time he goes down, I'm like, he's not getting up.
By the way, this is a weird comparison, but and I think you'll be with me on this, but very sad to hear about Willie McCovey, the passing of Willie McCovey. Right, yeah. Rest in peace. But you know, when you see old clips of Willie McCovey playing, especially older Willie McCovey, and he's big, but he's been beaten up and bad knees, and the way he runs and the way he moves, that reminds me of what Gronk looks like a big,
yeah, or
a
like
big,
Andre Dawson when you see him at the end of his career. Yeah.
Yes, good call. Big guy that's just taking a pounding, and the joints aren't there anymore. And Gronk is sort of advanced age as far as his body goes, just because he's always been so beaten up, and he plays that brand of football, which is scary for George Kittle because he also plays that brand of football, very physical, and takes a pounding. So left the game actually on Thursday too, and came back. So
yeah, he's a lot like Breida too. Like there's at least once a game where he's walking off limping and he's getting looked at, and then he's right back out there.
Yeah, it's awesome to see these guys that aren't quitting and that are playing hard, and even though they're hurt, they're jumping back in the game when they were 1-7. That's pretty cool. So definitely kudos to Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch for bringing in high quality people and high football character guys. And I think at some point when they get a few more weapons and quarterback play is good and a pass rush is there, I mean, you can see just how that all works together. Watching a quarterback keep a team on the field, score points so the other team becomes one-dimensional. The defense is fresh because they're not on the field all game. Pass rush gets to the quarterback. Now the defensive backfield looks great. It's just, it all works together, that relationship, and it's so important. Good quarterback play and a pass rush. I mean, that's the key to 2019. All right, more from Nick, more from the mailbag right after this.
As we're going forward here in 2018, I'm not that into like get all the young guys out there. I'd say just get the best guys out there. You know, whoever's looking the best in practice, whoever's done their homework, Mullins, you know, like I want to see guys out there that want to compete, that are playing hard, that want to win football games despite being 2-7. You know, and I think that this was coming off a great win, you know, going into another possible win and then into a bye. The next 3 weeks could feel real good as a 49er fan. And that's fun for what we've been through so far this season.
And it's key that he earned it. Like Nick Mullins earned where he's at right now. He earned it. Yeah. And so you don't want to just start throwing dudes in who didn't earn it.
I don't want that.
So I totally agree there. I'm with you.
And the same with Trent Taylor. Like if he's not 100%, Reuben Foster, like don't put those guys in there. You know, there's no reason to risk anything major. If one of them tears an Achilles or something, boom, now you're looking at another year rehab for these guys. Like, especially with Foster's shoulder, you know something's not right there. You've seen this guy play at 100%, and he has not been at 100% for the majority of this season.
I got a long question here about the draft from Wayne. He says he listens every day from a little town of Clover, South Carolina. So shout out to Clover, South Carolina. I had to take this question just because And kind of passed over some other Nick Mullins questions because we've talked a lot about him and we will continue to talk a lot about Nick Mullins because he's a superstar, right?
Real quick, did you see what Richard Sherman called him in his post-game presser?
Yes, I did.
BD Nick.
BDN. Yep. A lot like the guy who joins me once a week on this podcast.
Totally, dude.
Am I right?
100%.
So, Wayne says, I've been listening to the past few shows that I know this is a lost season, yet we're talking about another lineman in the first round again. Eric Armstead, Joshua Garnett, DeForest Buckner, Solomon Thomas, Mike McGlinchey, all first round picks, yet we ignore the playmaking positions. In the Rams game 2 weeks ago, a receiver did not catch a ball until the third quarter. That is the issue that needs to get fixed. We need to get playmakers and put them around Jimmy Garoppolo. So thank you for the email, Wayne. And it's a good point. Like, I think I understand too that the 49ers have dipped into like not even just the defensive line, the offensive line now have been the other first round picks that weren't defensive linemen for the last, what is that, 7 straight picks aside from Reuben Foster in the first round. So I get that. And I think Wayne is right about the 49ers continuing to need to add playmakers and weapons on offense. But at the same time, it's sort of like quarterback. If you don't have one yet, you got to keep trying until you get one. And I think that's the way it is with the edge rusher and the pass rush, because if you don't have that pass rush, you're not going to have a great defense.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I mean, they've tried to put the guys around him. You know, they bring in McKinnon, who's this electric back, you know, and this and that, and they bring in Garcon, who's this possession receiver who's going to get, you know, catch 100 balls, and Goodwin, who's this deep threat who can spread the field and this and that. And it's just not working out right now. And yeah, I don't mind spending these high draft picks on the defensive line and the offensive line, and maybe on a safety or a cornerback, or let's solidify some of those positions that these guys do last a very long time. Like, I'm with you on you don't take a running back high because their shelf life is so short, you know? So when you use these high draft picks, you do need to get guys that have some longevity. You know, it's an investment in the future of your franchise, which is why the McGlinchey pick at the time, everybody's like, whoa, what? Okay, no, that makes sense. You know, it just took a second because, you know, you had all this flash and like, oh, this is a possibility and this and that. And it's like, no, that totally makes sense. Joe Staley's getting older. You know, you put him at right tackle first, and then when Staley's gone, you move him over to left, and that's worked out great so far. He's looked like the guy you wanted to draft there. He looks like, you know, the best offensive lineman in that draft so far.
That's a good point about the McGlinchey thing, too, is the other thing we didn't know about at the time is that they had a deal in place to trade away a guy that they didn't think was a fit, someone that they weren't going to sign long term, in Trent Brown, who's now going to be a free agent that somebody has to pay. So it makes a lot more sense under that lens. If they would have traded Trent Brown the day before the draft, everyone would have been like, oh, yeah, obviously, okay, they're
going to. We know where they're going, yeah.
So,
and maybe they didn't want to because they didn't want anybody to jump in front of them to get their guy McGlinchey.
Right, and so they didn't know. So the deal was probably like, hey, we'll trade you Trent Brown if we, you know, tomorrow if we draft
McGlinchey. Keep it on the hush,
today.
Though.
Right. And which is awesome because the McGlinchey was the Raiders guy. And everybody,
I love
that
whole story.
That was like the rumor that was out there. Everybody knew that the Raiders loved McGlinchey. And the week leading up to the draft, all of a sudden, all the big media mock drafts had McGlinchey really high. And it was like, whoa, okay, he went from the late first round or mid to late first round all the way up to the top 10 in everybody's mock. That's interesting. And then, so you get all that late information. And sometimes it's schadenfreude, you know, sometimes it's way off and completely wrong. And smoke screens, but the McGlinchey thing was definitely obviously right. And so,
it could be one of those things too, where like, I don't know if you know much, follow basketball too much, but Rick Pitino had a chance to draft Tim Duncan, but the lottery didn't go his way when he was with the Celtics. And he, you know, and we saw how well he did with the Celtics. This could be a thing where, you know, you miss out on the coin flip, you miss out on McGlinchey, and you go after the next best guy in your opinion, and it's not working out so well.
And it's another reminder to draft the best player,
right?
Not just draft for need all the time. So it's still important to draft the best guys and hit on your draft picks. And so, you know, the 49ers could have used a lot of things maybe in the draft. The fact that they got offensive tackle is maybe the third most important position in football, right? Quarterback, I think pass rusher, then, you know, corner is right there along with offensive tackle. Those four positions.
Yeah, especially your blindside tackle, yeah.
Right. Those
Which is what he's going to be in the future.
And so they nailed it. So when you hit on that, that's like standing ovation, bravo, you nailed that pick, offensive tackle, amazing. Like,
he looks so good on that Mostert run, too.
Oh, his run blocking's insane. He's the best run blocking tackle in the NFL. His ability at his size to get out and move, and that's obviously what Kyle Shanahan saw in him. He's like, oh, this is what I need to run my offense. And that's the other thing, is we've seen now with Weston Richburg as well, and the 49ers got their offensive line straight. Everybody they throw in there is just tearing it up. Raheem Mostert, career special teamer, 7.5 yards per carry.
Right.
Small
undrafted
school,
free undrafted, agent Breida.
Right, exactly. 7.5 yards per carry. He's on one ankle right now, 5.5 yards per carry. And so it's clear for the 49ers got their offensive line straight. Kyle Shanahan's offense, that running game is going to be good. Cross that off. Like, you're
real
done
quick
there.
Before we get out of here, what do you think the chances are of Sam Bradford
of
coming over?
Oh, to the Niners?
Yeah.
I don't know. Do we have to pay him like another $20 million?
No, dude's made like $127 million in his career.
Amazing. He's never
nuts.
He's never played a playoff game. Not only has he never won one, he's never zero playoff appearances.
That's crazy.
Drafted in 2010, he's made $130 million.
Yeah.
And No. Yeah.
Well done, sir.
I mean, yeah, good for him. Good job. I would like, why is he even, he's been banged up a lot. Go sit on a beach. What are you doing?
I know, right? He must really have this itch to prove himself.
You want to be able to chase your kids around when you're older. He's not that old either. What is he, maybe 30?
If that, man, I don't even know.
You got your whole life ahead of you. Go sit on the beach. Go, you know, do something other than football because you got all this money and you're not that great. And you can still walk, you know.
He is 30 years old. He'll be 31 actually this week, couple days. Yeah, just walk away, dude.
By the way, the Sam Bradford draft pick, the moment it happened, it was like, are you really going to draft a quarterback, number one overall, that's cross-eyed?
Yeah.
Have you seen him close up? He's completely cross-eyed. Yeah. Like, that's got to come up in draft meetings. Like, dude, are we going to draft the cross-eyed quarterback right now, one overall?
They're like, no, that was just a bad picture.
Yeah, it's a bad angle.
Yeah. That seems like a good place to end.
That's a perfect place to end it. Don't draft cross-eyed quarterbacks. I think that's clear. All right, Nick, thanks again for joining me, as always.
My pleasure.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Be back with Patricia Traina, host of Locked On Giants, for another LOPN crossover episode tomorrow right here on Locked On 49ers.
See ya.